I'm not going to say very much, be pleased to hear, because we have a very special guest, should have asked if he was here, newly ordained. We're also very fortunate to have his private priest at the time, Deepa, with us from Pavloka as well. A number of us were very privileged to be at Pavloka for the ordinations last Saturday, and one of the things that really struck me as we were sitting there and seeing there was five men being ordained, and there's a sixth man being ordained this afternoon in Dublin. So as we were sitting there, one of Sangharakshi's teachings that came back to me was there's a part in the survey where he's talking about Shraddha, or talking about faith, and Sangharakshi goes into these three aspects of faith: this intuitive response, this rational investigation, and experiential verification. And I experienced all of that happening during the ordinations, this intuitive response to what was happening with the ordinations. And I could really feel my trust, my confidence, my Shraddha really starting to erupt. And then that was being verified in my experience as well. So as I was experiencing this, feeling it rise up, feeling this kind of dharmic shot in the arm. But I think GPs should be prescribed a dharma shot. None of this flu jabs. Of that. Well, I could just feel all that arising, and you know, it just felt really important, this movement through these aspects of faith or trust or confidence that Sangharakshi was describing. I just felt all of that last Saturday. It was a very special day, and I was privileged to be there with Shivadasan and to have shared, I've been coming along for 11 years next weekend, and I've been privileged to share all of that with you, so thank you. I'll hand over to you.
Thank you. So I had to really think about what this talk would be about. And obviously it's my maiden talk, so it's got to be something special. I don't know whether or not, but I thought so. I've got some friends, my good friend here, and my other good friend, but you're all my friends. That's a couple of... my sadhana is Green Tara, and there's quite an interesting story, but I'll bring to that. And the lovely one that Jack did, which was also an interesting story. I like interesting stories. I don't like things to be too formal, and this definitely won't be. But I wanted to take you through the journey. It's a long journey I've come to arrive at this spot. Very, quite an adventure, really, when I think about it. And it's been like at good fortune. That's a remarkable good fortune. So, I've called this Changing World, Changing Self, Blessed Saturday the 30th of September 2017. So, what time is it?
12 o'clock.
It's gotten 12, yeah.
So we were ordained at 2 o'clock. So it's almost a week. But, had some real interesting folk with me. Two Scotsmen, an Irishman, somebody from Norfolk, who lived in Colchester, the youngest order member there is at the moment, 25. Don't ask me to pronounce their name. But they were all incredibly interesting men that I was ordained with. And remarkable Dharma Deepa, who's easy to underestimate. So where did this all start? Well, a long time ago I wanted to change the world. To change society. To rid it of the corrupt capitalist system that dominates our lives. And I couldn't understand why so few people have so much in terms of financial wealth and power, and so many other people have very little. Couldn't understand the logic of that. So I was quite angry with society. And I was thinking, and this quote came up from a punk, anarchist punk band called the Subhumans, great name for a band. and they said, why can't all that money spent on war be used to feed the poor? And I couldn't explain why that wasn't happening either. So this is who I am. I marched against the bomb, against wars, I marched against the Falklands and the Iraq War. I joined the Peace Pledge Union, the War Register Society, the Conscientious Objector organisations. I worked at an animal sanctuary, I protected badger sets in Folkestone and Dartmoor. That was quite an experience. I sabotaged fox hunts in this area for 2 years. I walked from Stonehenge, from London to Stonehenge, the year after the Battle of the Minefield. I don't know if anybody remembers that. And I also lived at Menwith Hill Peace Camp for a year and a half, which is up in Yorkshire.
I'll talk to you about that later.
One of the most amazing things of that is at the Peace Camp, and probably throughout those things, I met some really remarkable people, particularly at the Peace Camp. There were about six of us, and they were very, very human. And it was the real first time that I sort of lived outside of the system, out of conventional society, and discovered a mythic realm, really. Very, very powerful. So I met quite remarkable people. I was very, very fortunate. And you had to walk for a mile and a half after getting off the bus. And you saw this light up above the American spy base, is basically what it is. And they had big, big golf balls. Huge complex. Very, very frightening, very like Big Brother. And then there was us hippies playing on the side, skipping around like fairies and looking weird. Which I think was very unsettling for them. That went a little bit wrong. I did do an animal liberation camp as well. And then I helped build an anarchist club in Bradford called the 1 in 12 Club. By build it, I mean also work there and help scrape the walls and change the decor of it. And I was a squatter in Leeds for a year. But I also did tons of other stuff. But again, I met remarkable people, and they did things outside of conventional society. Is that me?
Yeah.
But a few years after that, I got involved with Sarah, and she killed herself. So it was a really tough time. And that was after my son was born. The reason why I bring this up is because I think we're forced to grow sometimes when we don't want to. We have to learn about ourselves, have to discover things about ourselves. And I discovered I was a mess. I wasn't familiar with grieving, I wasn't familiar with being upset. Oh, little bird in there. All sorts of unusual sounds. I think I found out in those, I think there's a saying, isn't it? You can be the worst you can be, or you can be the best you can be. I think at that moment in time I became the worst I could be. I sort of lost it all, really. I think grief has a profound impact on you. And of course it's all about me, it's all about you. So I was very fixed on my own pain, my own suffering. And also became very insular. Found it a very difficult time, extremely difficult. But something happened amidst all that. And that was that I discovered the NKT, New Kadampa Tradition. And I started going to their things and was quite astonished. I went into a room that they had in Popham Abbey near York, and it was golden, a golden room of many, many candles, many, many figures. I was deeply touched, being very affected by the fact that this was a spiritual realm, this was a different realm, this was a different space to be in. I suppose touching upon the Peace Camp and that sort of transition, that there were things happening in the background. So rather than being fixed on trying to change the world in all its chaos, and it's probably worse now than it was then, interestingly, we're talking about it. There's a quote that Leonard Cohen says when he does the O2 festival, and he says, it's good to be amongst friends in a world that's so dark and chaotic. I think it's also very moving. And it was like that. And this little Irish guy, I remember his accent, was polishing the lamps, and he said something like, aren't we amongst the gods here? Aren't we amongst the angels? And it really did feel like it was. So despite all this terrible suffering, psychological difficulties, something was shifting, something was beginning to emerge. And the teaching was on the labyrinth of the path, and something else was weird was happening. I was hearing the words the monk was delivering before he was saying them. So it was sort of a deja vu. A second or two later, I just heard him saying it. His mouth didn't move until then, so I could actually hear him, which again was very strange. And I did a Jason Carper empowerment with the head of their movement, that they believe you can plant seeds in and they will emerge centuries later. But it felt very empowering. But the area I was living in, Bradford, was a really tough area, very poor, very neglected. It's a Bradford area called Manor, very, very neglected area. And you can see the poverty at... It was also, there was lots of violence and aggression, lots of desperation amongst all that. So I decided to leave. I didn't want a young child being a young child, so I moved down here in 1995 when I first started coming here. St- started doing study. I think I even did some study with Dharmadipa at that age. Went to Rivendell, did meditation classes, and I did a lot of meditation classes upstairs. And another very strong, vivid image is of hearing the chanting, because I think the Sangha night must have been on a Wednesday night. So I was listening to this chanting while meditating. That's nice. Why am I not doing that? I was quite frightened of, because you didn't really know that much about what was going on in them days. It's much more open now. So what are they doing down there? It was like that. You ask a few questions and you find out a little bit more. And I managed to persuade a friend to agree with me to become a mitra. He pulled out and I was in it. So I was stuck in it. So that was it. So I became a mitra in 99. And Dhammavijaya was really helpful in all that. He was really helpful to tell you things. So I went to Ariyatama and discovered a little bit more about Ariyatama. And then I just carried on doing study. But because I had a young child with me, I had to think about other things to do. So I went to child-friendly retreats with the Buddha Field, did those for a number of years. Went to try to have a break, try to find more of myself. So I went on winter retreats with the LBC, London Buddhist Centre, did the Buddha Field Festival. And then eventually I went to Dance of the Deafless. Dhammavijaya did this retreat in Padmaloka, I think it was in 97. And God, it was cold. I remember Padmaloka was really cold then, and there were caravans. So I was sitting in the lounge, which is such a different place now, thinking, what is going on? Is this how you get enlightened? Is this how you grow and develop? Well, obviously it is, because I'm still here. But no, I'm not enlightened, certainly not enlightened. But we burnt our own coffee, which was quite magical. So we were carrying it. Then we burnt ourselves. That's going to be the end. So there was a profound teaching in that. That we're only around for a short space of time. We need to do the best we can. That was actually very beautiful. Again, I think we've got a lot to thank Dhammavijaya for. But things were emerging, things were changing about me. I was slowly, over a long, long period of time, getting calmer, being much more aware of my relationships, being much more aware of my harsh language, how I could hurt people. I was very sarcastic at one point. But a lot of that's just disappeared gradually and over a period of time. I think one thing I've learned is you've got to be gentle with yourself sometimes. When you're suffering very harsh, very difficult emotions and feelings. I do that in my job now. I work in mental health, and I try to get people to be gentle and kind, because they're usually very, very self-critical. But I heard this quote. No, I was given this quote. It was on the bottom of an email. When we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. That was said by Viktor Frankl, who survived the concentration camps. If anybody was going to say anything that strong, how could anybody find that sort of truth in such a difficult situation? But he did. He wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. It's very, very powerful. And he observed that people that had no real purpose in life tended to survive it better. And I thought, I'm very lucky, because I do have a lot of meaning and purpose in my life. But not just to get angry anymore or want to change things that are unchangeable. But it's sort of, that enables you to bring life to life. And it's really hard to bring life to life, but if you do things that are really meaningful to you, and I think I'm going to mention you again, Dhammadipa, don't mind, stay close to your sources of inspiration, really help me. Stay close to the things that move you, that help you to find fulfillment in your life. But he also, there's beauty in that, great beauty. And he tells this story, well, he said, he observed those that despite the terrible conditions they were in, walked through the concentration huts, comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. And that just made me think that you can die physically, your body can die, but do you want your heart to die? Do you want your kindness to die? Do you want your humanity to die? And obviously there's probably something in those people. They didn't want to lose those much more precious things. Everybody's got a body, but what you choose to do with it is incredibly important. And I think I strive to do that very badly. I think it's a really hard thing to do, but to stay kind when you're feeling miserable and upset, angry, disappointed. but it's something that's worth striving towards. I think Sangharakshita was with Nich Tachhan, and Nich Tachhan said, they asked them what was the most important thing to do, and I think Nich Tachhan said to be kind, but Sangharakshita said to be friendly. So if you can't be kind, try to be friendly. And I think those are actually really important things to do. I'll always be generous, I think, was another thing he recommended. And that could be with time, it could be with anything. And I saw another quote, when I was at the Buddha field. Apparently the Buddha said, if you knew the power of generosity, you would not go a single meal without sharing it. Which I think, that's incredible, really. It's incredible to even think of that. So. But Viktor Frankl also met a woman who was in the concentration camps, and she used to look through her window and she could see a chestnut tree. It's in the book, and it had two blossoms on it. And the more she spoke about it, the more she, well, they knew they had to die, so there was sort of no way out, although he survived. But she died with gratitude for seeing those beautiful things in her life rather than with bitterness. It's a very, very touching story. Again, it's not really the length of our life that matters. It's more to do with what we do with our lives, I think. And I feel very fortunate I moved towards that. The other thing is I was reading a book on the retreat by Subhuti, and he was talking about the significance and value of each moment in your life, and that this is really what mindfulness is about, seeing the deeper significance in all things, in all experience and in all action. So a moment is a lifetime. You know, what you do, I was really enjoying the meditation. You know, actually cultivating loving kindness towards a friend, towards a neutral person, towards an enemy, a difficult person, is a beautiful thing to do with your life. It makes you see them differently. It makes you resonate with who they are differently. It makes it significant. I've always enjoyed the neutral one. It seems to have changed me a lot. You know, if I go in a supermarket, I notice people more, those opportunities to grasp and be kind with your words, to have a chat with somebody, to find out about their life. I just think it's amazing. And all because of the metta-bhava. It's just incredible. He also said, this is the beauty, I've got a lot of time for the beauty. I used to find it difficult to read, but it seems to make a lot of sense. The significance is there waiting to be perceived. The significance is in life, so to speak. Life is deeply, inherently significant, but we have to see it, we have to look for it, we have to tease it out, we have to bring it to life within us. So in being more aware, being more friendly, being more, having more loving kindness enables you to open up to others, to be more transparent with the heart, to not be overwhelmed by difficulties, but to reach out from them, to understand that everybody finds life very hard. Some people find life very hard. One thing that when I lost my partner, I was very sort of consumed by myself. And then I heard somebody done a psychologist that looked at the pictures that children had drawn, painted and drew in Palestine and the Gaza Strip, where they suffer incredible violence. And all of them had post-traumatic stress disorder. My suffering sort of dwindled into nothing. You know, not a child living in a tent without water or food. And they had lost their parents. But tell them, what are those poor children suffering? And life is suffering, but it doesn't. That's not the meaning and purpose of it. That's part of it. There's much greater things behind that. And then I saw this other quote from George Bernard Shaw. And I thought it really moved me. I thought it's how we could use our lives well. In a way, I was thinking this when I was walking out. It's egotistic on one level, but it's also egoless on another. So it's quite an incredible quote. But it's called A Splendid Torch. This is the true joy in life, the being used for a purpose, recognized by yourself as a mighty one. The being a force of nature instead of a feverish little clog of ailments and grievances, complaining that the world would not devote itself to making you happy. I am of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it whatever I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die, for the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle for me. It is a sort of splendid torch which I hold of for the moment, and I want to make it burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations. Which I really love. we can all be burning candles, we can all be splendid torches. Don't be consumed by your ego. But I think the Sangharakshita advises, just let it fade away. Get out of your way. Don't let yourself get in the way of your a bigger, greater self. But it's lovely listening to Michael Bandy. Well, he made a lot of sense. So privileged to hear him talking. Just a remarkable man. He's another man that's so easy to not notice what he's saying, but he says some pretty good stuff. So that's the changing world. That's the changing self. But I am deeply blessed. I'm incredibly blessed. I'm wearing one of these. Doesn't hide the Buddha. But we are very fortunate to be in this room. We're very fortunate because it's a path. It's a journey that moves away from samsara. But I'm not sure how many Buddhas emerged during an eon. It's not many. Dipanka, he was the past Buddha. We know of his name, but we don't know what he did. And Maitreya will be the one that will emerge after this Buddha's legacy disappears. And apart from that, as I said, people in Croydon High Street know very little about how to emerge as enlightened human beings. Life is hard for them. They smoke, they drink, it's not easy. We watch TV to try and find happiness. That's not easy. There is no happiness, no substantial happiness there. So I feel very fortunate to have discovered the Buddha. I feel very fortunate to have discovered the Dharma. I feel very, very fortunate to have discovered the Sangha. I was petrified of getting involved with anybody. But I was very, very deeply insecure, very unconfident. It's wonderful people like Kari Goshen, I hope I pronounced your name right, Ian in them days, who also, I think, struggled. We used to talk about how we struggled with engaging. To actually allow yourself to become part of the community, a spiritual community, to have the bravery and the courage to do that. I recommend doing it, even if it's hard, do it. Just do it. You'll be surprised how much of you there is that you can engage with other people, even if you think there isn't. I feel very grateful to Sangharakshita. I've met him twice in quite circumstances where I've been out to hear him with two different GFR groups. And in the first one particular, when he had his strength and his vitality, he spoke to us for an hour and a half, which was quite incredible.
There was lots of cake.
Yeah, lots of cake. And so we gave him cake on the second one as well, made by Alex, who is a gifted cake maker. But I feel very grateful to have met the True Ratna Buddhist Order, people like Dharmatipika, people like Maitrabandhu, Satyaraja, Sadaloka, Surita. They're all members of the ordination team. Again, easy to underestimate. People that devote a lot of their lives to helping other people and really care about conveying the Dharma, the meaning, the Sangha, the real living meaning of trying to be more ethical, more helpful in the world. Maitrabandhu was saying last week, to bring good into the world, to be good and bring good into the world. I think I made that mistake much earlier on of thinking that I could be a mess and sort out that mess. No, it's the wrong way around. A smile can matter a lot more than walking on a mark sometimes. It might be important, but actually smiling a lot of the time in your life, looking out for other people, helping, being helpful as much as you can, makes a big difference to your life and makes a big difference to theirs. I feel very grateful to my brothers and sisters. You help make this environment, you help make this space sacred, something more important, something more sacred, something more meaningful. I feel very grateful to Pavloka. It's a remarkable centre. It's grown and developed. It offers so much now. I went to Vajraloka a few weeks ago. I was just so impressed by the men there and the people I was on retreat with. It was quite amazing. I went to Dharmakosha a couple of years ago. It's just so beautiful, just embracing the Scottish countryside with the deep, meaningful spirituality connected to it. It's the retreat centre, not far from Stirling. I've been to Anastana twice. Again, huge centre. The resources going on there are just amazing. I feel grateful to Virochana. It's the first Buddha I really connected with. It's the Buddha in the middle of the mandala, of the five Buddhas. Very close to death. He helps you when you're going through grief. He helped me. Very grateful to Dharmadipa. Very, very grateful to Dharmadipa. And I'm grateful for Dharmadipa's advice. Dharmadeepa told me to look at Green Tara because she's approachable. She's actually, you can approach her and she's open, she's accessible. So she's an archetypal bodhisattva. But she's known as the star, the sabress, and the one who ferries across from samsara to nirvana, from suffering to not suffering. She's magical, she's mythical, she's beyond the mundane samsaric realm and sort of exists in the mythical realm where truth meets reality, where we are so, it's a long way for us, it's a vast distance, but in the heart it's much closer. Physically it's a difficult place to reach, but I find emotionally, emotional engagement with Tara is a fundamental, deeply fulfilling one. I'm getting to know her. She's my sadhana. I'm doing her every time, trying to evoke her every day. And I just wanted to explain some interesting stories. Jack, the wonderful Jack there, this was the first gift I received. Jack put his hand up on my shoulder, something like that, and he gave it to me. In the shrine room as he was leaving. I said, wow, this looks familiar. I think you painted her the night before. Mm-hmm. And Jack didn't know she was my sadhana. It's quite a serious, that's a beautiful figure. This figure here of Tara is even more strange because a man came up one evening. This happened. And I knew him a lot. I think he was bothered by mental health problems. And I think mental health problems are very mysterious. It's not just about making people normal. And I wouldn't re-accept it. He said, I saw in a dream that I had to give this figure to you. I said, no, wait, no, this kid's, you know, I think he's got a gold eye. It's worth a lot of money. I said, no. He disappeared. He kept giving it back to me. So he left me with her. That must have been 8 or 9 years ago. But, this one I bought in a shop called Enlightenment in Glastonbury. but what I like about the red one, she's almost the wrong colour, is that she's quite pure. She's not heavily decorated. It doesn't appear heavily decorated as a figure. I think it sort of links up to my name. Shuddhavasi means he who dwells in purity, he who stands in purity. But I've always tried to cultivate a good heart. Failed miserably many times, but I've always tried to be genuine. I think that's what allowed me to move towards the true Rakhna Buddhist order. To be honest, Michael Bandy was very kind. We went, me and the youngest member went there for a weekend. He said, Kelvin's like a stick of rock, it's the same message the whole way through. And hopefully I'm not a fly-by-nighter. But so I just want to explain Tara, and I want to do her chant, her mantra. I'd invite you to join in, and then we just let it fade, and I'll read the transference of merit and self-surrender. I think it would be quite nice to do that in unison, actually. Mm. Everybody knows it. Yeah. So I want to explain a few things about her because it helps me to engage with her and helps you, maybe helps you to become more familiar with who she is. So, I've given three of her names. When you're doing a visualization practice of her, her lotus, which emerges in your imagination, there's probably a lot more going on there, it's a pale blue lotus. It's a pale blue lotus of light. On top of it is a white moon mat. So you're evoking that. So you can imagine the growth of the lotus moving from the dirt to the bottom of the pond into the bright sunshine. And then she sits in it. She's a figure in green. But the first thing you notice is her foot is on a small lotus and mat, ready to enter the world, ready to offer help. And then you notice her hand, which is in dharma, the mudra of generosity. I'm getting this right. I'm a newborn. But in both hands, she has three buds of a lotus. One is closed, one is more open, one is really open. Now, I was originally told that this was symbolic of impermanence, but it also could mean personal development. So she's inviting you to develop. She's inviting you to notice that much of life is about suffering, it's oppressive, and the Buddha called it oppressive, but there's more to that, there's much more going on. There's liberation, there's freedom, there's becoming greater beings, there's something that's worth striving, however difficult that is, there's a path, a journey. I'll just go briefly back. When I was in the NKT, somebody was talking about why they were a Buddhist, and they said because the Buddha mapped out the journey away from suffering. What we need to do is experience the terrain to actually get familiar with the environment of Nirvana, the environment of what the Dharma really imparts to us. We need a real sense. We need to let it soak into our beings and experience it. The other thing you notice about the figure, she's beautiful, she's young, she's 16, she has warmth, she has smiles. She has a very warm smile. So she's engaging you, she's allowing you to engage with your heart. She's a metaphor for compassion. And I quite liked what Dharmadipa said. She's beyond our imagination, she's beyond our concepts, she's beyond our limitations. Very hard for us to connect, so we have to be really open-minded, open-hearted to allow her to enter us. And this is the way we do it. She emits green light from her heart to the crown of your head. It goes into your heart. And you chant her mantra, which goes anti-clockwise around your heart. I'm explaining it in quite a mechanical way, just to be descriptive. But it's a lot more of an organic process than that. It's a lot more that you're meeting a very dear friend, someone who really deeply cares about you. She's forgiving even if you get it wrong. And on her crown, she's got five jewels. At the very top of her head, she has Amitabha. She's from the family Amitabha. But she contains the qualities of all five Buddhas of the Mandala, Akshobhya, Ratnasambhava, Amitabha, Amoghasiddhi and Virochana. So her family is infinite light, is red, the figure at the top of her crown. So this is an incredible figure. This is an incredible metaphor for a meaning of our lives beyond the mundane. This is a transcendental figure. So going back to her mantra, we switch on. You might, while we're doing it, you might want to close your eyes and just imagine her soft and transformative light entering the crown of your head and coming down into your heart and filling you up. Almost not dissimilar to the fatness, the fullness of the metta, but we're becoming full of stuff and energy, much more refined, much more subtle, that opens us up to our genuine inherent selves, the purity of our hearts, ourselves beyond the delusional states that we often find ourselves in, where we get deeply troubled by life's smallness, and we're unable to see it, our greatness, our bigger selves, our kindness, our way of being playful in the world, but skillful in the world, and making a better place. So, I'm going to start chanting. I invite you to get as relaxed as you can and join in. Don't leave me doing it on your own. Please, get quite good to feel. Probably won't, but used to. And just imagine her transformative light. Moving down from the crown of your head into your hearts. Everybody ready? Om ta re tu ta re tu re swaha. Om ta re tu ta re tu re swaha. Om ta re tu ta re tu re swaha. Om ta re tu ta re tu re swaha. Om Tare Tu Tare 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 Tu as we were chanting, I was remembered that there's an aura around her body, a blue aura around her body, and a red aura around her head. But very beautiful figure to chant, really powerful figure. So I invite you to do the rejoicing in merit with me, please. So, I rejoice with delight.
I rejoice with delight.
In the good done by all beings.
In the good done by all beings.
Through which they obtain rest.
Through which they obtain rest.
With the end of suffering.
With the end of suffering.
May those who have suffered be happy.
May those who have suffered be happy.
I rejoice in the release of beings.
I rejoice in the release of beings.
From the sufferings of the realms of existence.
From the sufferings of the realms of existence.
I rejoice in the nature of the Bodhisattva.
I rejoice in the nature of the Bodhisattva.
And the Buddha.
And the Buddha.
Who are protectors.
Who are protectors.
I rejoice in the arising of the will to enlightenment.
I rejoice in the arising of the will to enlightenment.
And the teaching.
And the teaching.
Those oceans which bring happiness to all beings.
Those oceans which bring happiness to all beings.
And are the abode of welfare of all beings.
And are the abode of welfare of all beings.
Thank you very much.
It may be that some of you just should have asked inside how Gauri may have things to pass to him. So if that's the case, then form a disordered queue and do so. But yes, that's a good idea. So maybe there could be three loud things about to happen just to make some noise in our new shrine.
Sadhu! Sadhu! Sadhu!
Thank you. Thank you very much.